and welcome to the Theatre Pitch Podcast. My name is Gem, this is Sean.
Hello. Hello, Gemma.
Hi, Sean.
Hi, Gemma.
Hi, Sean.
Okay.
Hey. And this is Joe.
Hi, Gem. And hey, Sean.
Hey,
I feel like I always say hey to you, Gem, but I just take it for granted that I don't say hey to you, Sean.
I won't lie to you, I've edited an absolute ton of these and I've never noticed whether you do or not.
Yeah, I listen to every one of them and I think this bit is just the bit that's like, oh, that's what gets said. It's like the little jingle.
This is the bit where I'm just like, yeah, cool, we've done this bit, cool, that's edited, yeah, cool, let's get into,
well,
let's get into the 10 minutes of Gemma talking.
Yeah, let's get out of this bit, and Gem, what's this podcast that people are listening to, or watching?
This is the Theatre Pitch Podcast, where we as theatre makers all take random online encyclopedia articles and we pitch how we would turn it into a theatre show. But because this is the final episode of the season, we are doing our big mega schmooshes, which means that each three of us have been allocated at random three of the previous articles that featured in this season of the Theatre Pitch Podcast that we have then had to create a pitch for those three articles that smush all of them together. So you're taking 3 points of inspiration and pitching the show that results out of that. So, Sean, what were your three articles?
My three articles, they were great ones and they fit together quite nicely. Crazy. I was like, what should I do? And it came to me. So mine is Archie vs. Predator 2.
Archie vs. Predator 2 is a comic book and independent company crossover written by Alex DeCampion, drawn by Robert Hack. It is the sequel to the 2015 comic Archie vs. Predator.
Thank you, Joe. My second article is Starvation in terms of glaciers. Yeah.
In glaciology, starvation is when a glacier retreats, not because of temperature increases, but due to precipitation so low that the ice flow downward into the zone of ablation exceeds the replenishment from snowfall.
And but the other one was it was the legend that is John Shubber.
John Shubber was a Tory British political satirist.
Brilliant. Okay, so those are Sean. Those are those. Wow, words. Sean's articles were what were just said. Joe, take over. What are your three articles?
My three articles were a list of twin towns and sister cities in Portugal. It's a list of twin towns and sister cities in Portugal. Mobile phone jammer. It's a device that blocks the signal of a mobile phone. And HD 32188. It's a star.
Fantastic. And my three articles were Tour Total. Is it Tour or is it Tower?
It's Tour.
Great, fantastic. Yeah. Joe, tell us what that is.
Tour Total is an office skyscraper located in La Défense, Courbevoie, the high-rise business district west and adjacent to the city of Paris, France, designed in the modern architectural style.
Great. Then the second article was the Millennium Challenge of 2002.
Millennium Challenge 2002 was a major war game exercise conducted by the US Armed Forces in mid-2002.
That one, you know what? That one should, like, you think about it, that one should be the, like, one of the easiest ones. But it's just not. Even, I'm so glad that was the episode that I weren't on. But even thinking about it now, it's just like,
what?
There's so much and nothing, and it just seems to be just like shit after shit after just nothing. It's like, oh, and then you've got to do that in a French building. Like, fuck that.
Yeah.
Sean, you do get the fun of repeatedly saying war games,
war games, war games. What's war games in French, Joe? I'm sure you know.
Well, war is, I don't actually, because I know that Star Wars in French is L'Étoile de Guerre, but I don't know whether L'Étoile or Guerre is the star. L'Étoile, because I think it is War of the Stars.
Yes.
So And what's it called when you play sports? I think it's... Is that
a distant memory for you?
You know what? No, I'm not gonna say it. I'm gonna take the high ground on this one.
Is that a Star Wars reference?
Well, have you got any thought on what the games are? You're googling it. I can hear the typing.
Yeah, okay, let's go with L'Étoile du Jeu. Je is the closest we can get to games.
Now do that in the William Regal accent.
L'Étoile du Jeu. Flower.
Right, where were we in the podcast?
We were in the podcast, but we
and also, Jem, you've got the 1,000 yen coin. The 1,000 yen coin is a denomination of the Japanese yen.
Yes. Which is also minted only for special occasions. So those are all of the articles that we had to smush together individually. So who wants to go first?
I think this should go in alphabetical order. Of first names.
First names.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Jem, you're up first.
Oh, here's me like running through the alphabet in my head. Like, what the... Because I'm like, but Joe, we both start with a J. And then my brain went, well, that's just a conundrum you can't solve, is it?
It's not what like there are more letters in our names.
No, it's not like I also was the nerd who liked being in libraries and alphabetizing. I'm doing
Wait,
so
have
well
we found
episode.
Another thing that we didn't know Jem likes, and that's alphabetizing.
Yeah, Jem loves sorting. When Gemma goes onto them websites, she goes straight to the top of like the graph, and she's like, "Oh, I can sort this by price.
Okay,
I can sort this by age.
Click,
sort."
It's just a helpful way to negotiate and navigate a system.
Gem.
Yeah.
Okay. Shag, marry, kill.
Ooh.
Dewey Decimal System.
Can't believe he does this.
The Harvard referencing system, and just plain alphabetizing.
Marry, alphabetizing, shag, Dewey Decimal, and kill, Harvard referencing. And I should not be able to do that quickly.
To be honest, that's the right answer.
Yeah. All right, so my pitch is, so you know when you're watching action films or a Michael Bay film or, you know, Die Hard, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you about to say that you're doing Die Hard? Because you've got a building.
I've got a building, and Die Hard did come to mind.
I'm already with you. I'm already on board.
You're with me, but you know that like most of those films, at some point or another, they have like a huge shootout in the middle of like an office building or something like that.
Yeah.
Paper goes
and he says,
flying,
and they're shooting, and he goes, shoot the glass, shoot the glass. But he says it in German to start off with, but I don't know that. I like Die Hard.
And the paper goes flying and shit goes down and yeah. So, I've always had the kind of comic thought of like, well, what, you know, that sort of free guy idea of, well, these people are just, you know, you're sitting there writing your boring report, trying to stay awake, and then suddenly... pow, 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 a dude in a tank top comes running in, and then there's all this exposition that gets shouted, and then somebody gets smacked over the face with a keyboard, right? So my show is an immersive show. It's an immersive kind of, not murder mystery, because there's no mystery, but it's an immersive mystery. It's designed to be played after work, so you can turn up in your work clothes and your work attire and be perfectly in the setting. So our audience members become the workers that are in the tower that is the Twitter total, right? And they are workers in an office in this tower block, right? And everybody has their computers and has their own desk. And as the show starts, I want to use like this idea that there's like a little bit of a messaging system on the computer. So there's a little bit of a setting of like, yes, we are working. A couple of people get phone calls, things like that, a little bit of multimedia. But the main primary bulk of the show is that suddenly an alarm goes off. They are told by a manager who comes into the room that they have to remain seated. They're going to try and figure out why the alarms are going off. But it's not, you know, just try and... And then suddenly your action hero comes rushing in and there's this big blowout. And the idea is that these action heroes and all these villains, I couldn't decide whether it was the action hero finally finding the coin or if it was the villains coming in to get the coin.
Oh, the coin?
They are, the coin has been hidden somewhere in this office, but everybody's kind of, I feel like the audience are given a little snippets in that first bit of like, you know, you're meant to hide the coin and you're meant to keep the coin hidden and things like that. But it's this idea that the potentially the villains come in looking for the coin and then the hero comes in and the audience have to decide what sides they're choosing. But it's essentially, it's that big crescendo that you get it at the back end of a Die Hard movie. But in the plot of that Die Hard movie, the villain is always after the coin. So yes, but it's kind of like pulling that, how Millennium Challenge comes in, is it's that idea of turning it into a little bit of a war game, turning it, bringing the explosion of the action scenes and the fighting and things like that, but also have it contextualized within this idea of like, we have to find the yen coin and having the audience have to decide who's the winner.
Right. I like it. Right. If you didn't have the build, I think I know why you've made it immersive, because you've got the building. Right.
Yeah.
But I think if you right, okay. I know how you make that better, and Joe's gonna know which show I'm ripping off, right?
Oh, can I guess?
No, not yet. Okay. Right. So I think this is how you make it better. You do it
actually,
end on.
I'm gonna write it down.
No. Oh my god. Okay. This guy, he loves interrupting people.
Yeah.
Loves interrupting people. He's writing it down. The thing is, he could write anything down because I've actually forgot what it's called, so who knows?
Fair enough.
So I think if you just had the war games and the coin, right, yeah. Then right, we sack off the foot. I'd watch this because when you were saying it, I was like, yeah, but okay. So the audience at end on, right? And you have your big like bad guy hero scene happens, da 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 da. They have the fight. The scene ends and the bad guy, they both leave the stage and the good guy comes back on and he's dying and he's like his last thing is to give a random audience member of a coin, right? Now the audience member cannot reveal that he has the coin,
right?
Yeah. Now that's the first 10 minutes. If this is a fringe show, that's the first 10 minutes. Now the hero goes off and dies, the villain comes on, and it's essentially 40 minutes of the villain taking some audience members onto stage to play drama games and whatever to work out who has the coin. Now, the audience members can decide what side they're on, but basically, if the audience can keep the coin at the end, then they win, and the villain has one guess at the end to work out who has the coin. But the rule is that if he says, you haven't got the coin, you have to say, like, yeah. You have to tell him the truth, but he's only allowed to do that a couple of times. Yeah, that's the show. And it's basically an egg hunt for the bad guy at the end. Joe, can you guess what show I'm ripping off?
I've got to be honest, I didn't. I guessed you were going to say Police Cops.
No.
But the show you're on about was actually Adam Riches did a show about a Christmas party where some turtles were killed in a tombola, wasn't it?
Yeah. Some turtles were killed in a tombola, and he interviews all the audience members to find out who it is.
And it's hilarious and crazy.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking when you were like, oh, the audience members have got a coin and they've got to hide that and they've got to hide it. That's what I would do. I like your idea.
I've got to be honest.
You've outpitched me. Well done.
Yeah, I'm going to buy Sean's pitch for your idea, Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. This is teamwork. Cool.
Okay. Yeah. There's one smush done, I think.
If we need to insert your third thing, we'll just say it's in France.
Say it's in France. But you know what? It's one of them. It's one of them with these. You have to. You'll see mine in a bit where it's a bit like, okay, so that's where the ice comes in. I don't blame Gemma, because the second you get a building or a thing, you get a physical object. You're like, I'm gonna put it in the building, because obviously I am. I know when I did Tour Total, I put it on outside of the building, but the building was always there.
I was hanging off
the building. That's what
I know. And when I was trying to smush, I was just like, no, you can't just steal Sean's idea for this and adapt it.
It's fine. I stole my idea of Samuel Beckett, just higher.
With more wind?
With lots more wind.
All right, well, Sean, do you want a pitch?
Yeah, I'll pitch. So mine was Archie versus Predator 2, ice.
Starvation and glaciology, and John Schieber.
So remember, John Schieber, he is... he was around a couple of centuries ago. He had a really great life, really weird life. Like, this is the guy who went to France and was like, I'm a doctor. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
he basically was just like spouting bullshit for his entire life and just going, yeah. So my idea is, it's a show. It looks like a kid's show, but it's for adults, basically. It's like Avenue Q. It's got all them hallmarks of like, oh, it's a family show, but it's definitely not. Okay, so it opens with Archie and the guys hanging out in Riverdale. Like, yeah, cool. Oh, and they're just getting out of school. And they're like, yo, are you coming on the field trip tomorrow? Oh, where's the field trip? Oh, we're going to... Iceland, no, Greenland, we're going for that geography trip. And they're like, okay, yep, I've got to get them to ice, Gemma, all right?
I'm not looking at you.
Yep, so we're on the plane, and then while they're on the plane, they're having a bit of banter about some of their past adventures, and the Predator gets mentioned, because remember, this is Archie versus Predator 2. So they already know about the Predator. Okay, so they get to Iceland. They're having a great time. They're like, and they're going on their thing. They've got their clipboards and their teachers there. And like, oh, we're high school students and we're testing out ice. But there's one bad apple in the class, and he's in the back smoking. Oh, and he's like, we're like, and then Archie's like, hey, we're a guest in this country. Put that out. And then he's like, oh, God, hate that Archie. Oh, he thinks he's so cool because he's Archie and everyone likes Archie. Oh, they should just call it Archiedale. No. So then he throws the cigarette, right? Now, remember, this is a lit cigarette and they're around ice. So as he throws it and it hits the ice around the cigarette starts to melt. What they don't know is that thousands and thousands of years ago is that a predator landed on Earth, crash landed and got stuck in the ice. Now that the ice is, yeah. I had Predator and ice, okay. So now that he's through the cigarette, the ice starts to melt. And as it melts, it reveals a predator.
What?
Oh my God. And then he kills the wrong gun, because obviously we have to send a good message that being a dickhead in someone else's country is wrong. So the Predator kills him straight away. And then some stuff happens. You know, it's classic Archer stuff where it's just like shenanigan after shenanigan. Chases them into the spaceship. And then somehow in a scuffle, a wrestling match. Somehow Archie and the Predator hit a device in the Predator's spaceship and it sends them back in time 200 years, right? Now, the first act is basically Archie defeating the Predator, but the issue is, in the final battle in Act 1, there's collateral damage, you know, some people take a hit, and one of them is John Shubber. That's the plot twist at the end. It's like, oh no, John Shubber. It opens with, now Archie, second act opens, Archie's like, what, oh, I've just dropped my phone, what do I do? It's like, I can't go back home because this guy, I don't know who he is, but I bet he's had an impact in the world. I bet. So his phone still works, luckily, and he Googles him, and he goes onto a popular Wikipedia article. It still works, just go with it. I've got time travel, his phone works, it happens in Doctor Who. He does an Archie thing, and it works. And he's like, oh. So then, Act 2 is basically Archie having to imitate this guy's life from what he understands it to be from Wikipedia. And that is why his Wikipedia is so ridiculous, because Archie is basically making this up as he goes along.
Oh my gosh.
And then it ends with a Predator. He has to fight a Predator again because it's Archie versus Predator 2. And as we know with the sequels, you have to fight it, two of them.
Twice.
So that's how it ends. And Archie never gets back. He just dies as John Shubber.
I was kind of thinking, I kind of, even separate from, like, if you stripped out all the Archie bits and the Predator bits, if we couldn't get the rights to it, I really like the idea of someone essentially going back in time, accidentally killing someone, and then having to take over their life so as not to disrupt time.
Yeah, that's my idea. Hey, Joe, you know I am really good at pitching time travel films. Okay, give me a thing and I will pitch you a time travel film for that.
Wait, between you saying you like time travel films, I like time and travel. Saying you like before Die Hard, do you like the 80s, Sean?
I like the 80s.
Cool. Well, the last bit definitely confused me and the audience. But
the Predator just comes back because it's a good ending. He has to defeat him again.
Yeah.
He has to defeat him again using what he's learnt being John Shubber.
It's no, okay. What you can do is explain it. That because Archie was back in time being John Shubber, he wasn't in the future to stop Predator. So Predator came back in time.
Yes, time travel is wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
And I got the ice in it.
You did.
In quite a way that I'm like, actually, I appreciate that. It's not necessarily about starvation of ice, but there is
Hang
ice.
On, but doesn't the starvation of ice mean that the ice melts and retreats?
Hmm.
I'm close there.
Yeah,
I'm close.
You're not wrong.
I just added the cigarette as a catalyst.
Yeah, I mean it's a powerful cigarette. It's a huge cigarette.
I'm very happy that we've got this anti-smoking message in there for the kids.
Yeah,
that's what I do. Hey, just say no.
And just the environmental thing of like, there's so little ice that one cigarette could destroy time and space.
What I do, I've always got a message.
I like it. I actually really do like that. I think, to be honest, I think it would probably work better as like a film or as a series of, that's filmed rather than a theatre show. But I like it. I like the story. Yeah.
Get Netflix on it. Get the CW on it. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, the CW is doing well with this kind of stuff.
To be fair, they've announced that they're wrapping up Riverdale at the end of the next series. So we don't know that this isn't how it ends.
Yeah, obviously is how...
I would love it if the last episode, they just announced they're all going on a trip to Iceland. And then this all happened.
Greenland.
Yeah.
I think that's the one I said.
Yeah, that was the one you said.
Who really cares?
Great. I love it. Joe, are you going to outpitch both of us?
I can't say I'm going to outpitch, but I will say, because it's the last episode of the series, I actually pre-planned this earlier today instead of just making this up on my ass as I go along right now.
Hell really can freeze over.
But if it does, one cigarette could melt it again.
Exactly. We've got the solutions here and now.
But so I was thinking about implicitly with getting the Twin Towns one, the idea that I feel like in any Twin Township, that there's got to be one that's better, right? Like,
is yours going to be about the town that just like, oh, what's the word? That's reaching above their weight.
But because I was thinking, like, there were lovely looking towns in Portugal that were twinned with, like,
Grimsby.
A municipality in East Cheshire. And then you look at it and it just looks like your standard town in England. And it's just like, they can't be thinking they're the good twin. But
it's just this lovely sunset of Portugal. And then in Britain, it's just this sign saying, welcome to Devon. And then someone's graffitied like, fuck off on it.
Exactly. But so I want to take that and apply it, obviously, with the concept of like, with the stars. So my play concerns a pair of twins, one of whom is an astronaut who's gone on this one-way trip to... they've been frozen, cryogenically frozen, and they're on a ship that's going to travel for 3,000 years to this other star to see if it's possible to live out there, but knowing that they can never come back. And then the other twin, who's kind of ostensibly our main character of this, is an astronomer. So you've got this power dynamic already where it's like, astronomer, people be like, oh, that's cool. But then when they hear astronaut, it's like, oh, they're the good twin. And so this astronomer has, with their child, moved to this observatory in a quite a remote part of Portugal in order to monitor the progress of their sibling. Because despite not wanting to live in their sibling's shadow, they can't escape wanting to track the signal of this ship that their sibling is on. Now, their child...
There's a good metaphor there, because wouldn't you have to track the shadow that the ship makes to track it?
Yeah, so he would be literally living in his sibling's shadow. And their child is someone who obviously is trying to communicate with their friends. They've got a lot of pen pals all around the globe, kind of like Twin Towns. But the signal is struggling to reach them. So they try and build a mobile phone signal extender so that they can get a better signal to try and reach their friends. But accidentally...
Mobile phone jacker.
Accidentally, they do the opposite and they build a jammer. And this jammer jams the signal of them trying to track the twin up in space.
Oh no, lost twin.
So this sends them off on a journey of the twin trying to kind of like get the parts necessary to fix the observatory so that they can catch up with this signal again. And essentially, the play is about this twin realizing that it doesn't matter whether they're the better twin, when really the thing that they learn is that it's more important for them to be the best father to their child that they can, instead of trying to be a better sibling.
Oh, I thought he was going to say, it's not about being the better twin. It's about being the twin that's on Earth when all their parents die so they can get the inheritance.
But yeah, essentially, it's not about who's... It's not about being better than anyone else. It's about being the best you. And it's about learning not to, as you say, not to constantly be chasing in the shadow of your sibling, but instead learning to stand in your own light.
Like Grimsby, in the light that peeks through the clouds in between the storms.
Exactly. Yeah. And, of course, Sean, do you want to know where this play is going to be held?
It's going to be held in Sunderland. It's going to be an arena show, and it's going to be played at their football ground because it's the arena. It's the Stadium of Light.
Close. It was actually the mother effing Birmingham Hippodrome.
Woo! Oh, boy.
It's a good theatre.
Okay, yeah, it is. It's nice. It is nice. I was expecting like a space theme. Nah, or a light
theme. I was going to go for it, and then I thought, nah, Hippodrome.
Hippodrome. Cool.
Fair it's enough. Good theatre.
It's massive theatre. It's massive.
Yeah. I mean, go on, Joe.
No, I was just going to say, because Sean, you obviously basically repitched Gems.
Yeah.
I didn't quite repitch yours, but I did solve one very small plot hole in the third act for you.
Okay.
The time travel thing. Or not necessarily solved, but I added to it.
I think you solved it. I think you made it more complicated.
Yeah, probably. But I still added to it. So I feel like in the circular way, Jem, do you have anything to add to my pitch?
I think that it would be really magical as a theatre show, but I think, and this might be really overly influenced by the fact that I very recently watched The Quiet Place 2 and was again taken by Krasinski's ability to just, like, The Quiet Place, like, wow, what a set of films. I feel like yours would be better as a film, kind of, like, mix it, because I kind of got half Ad Astra vibes.
Well, I was kind of thinking in my head, to be honest, kind of, yeah, like, funnily enough, to keep it 80s, kind of, like, early Amblin films, kind of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, kind of, you know, like Spielberg kind of earthbound sci-fi vibes.
Yeah, and I think it could be something, because like when I'm imagining this story and how it would manifest, like that it feels like it could be far more intimate, because it feels like something that is so, it has its moments of such intimacy that like I'd want to play with it with film. And that idea that you can have like immense intimacy on the background of something that is so galactically grand, and also it be in an observatory. I think if I were to change anything about it but keep it live, I wouldn't set it in the Hippodrome. I would put it into an observatory, one of the old ones like they have in Hampstead, because you're sitting there doing, you know, you're sitting there having the story told primarily from the inside depths of an observatory.
So I would go somewhere different with it. I was like, if you're setting it in the Birmingham Hippodrome, they have a ballet comp. Is it the Royal Ballet set? The Royal,
yeah.
They're there, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So I would turn it into a ballet, Joe.
Okay.
Imagine trying to interpret space travel via ballet.
I like that. By the way,
ballet, Gemma.
If you're wondering what the ending to it is, it's part
oh,
of...
Oh, I know what the ending is. I know what the ending already is. Already know what the ending is. He actually never gets there because on the rocket ship, there was a wrong-un, and even though he was meant to be frozen in time, that wrong-un was smoking a cigarette, and someone was like, Hey, there's loads of rocket fuel. Put that cigarette out. And he throws it. And as the rocket takes off, the cigarette hits the ice that he's frozen in, and he melts.
Yeah.
And he doesn't actually stay frozen for 3,000 years.
And then it becomes the plot of the film. It becomes the plot of the film Passengers, wherein the wrong'un accidentally unfreezes the twin and then falls in love with them.
Yeah, that's... No, what was what?
And then it,
no,
and then it,
no,
it,
no, the actual ending is essentially the twin on Earth realizing that ultimately there is no point them tracking the twin, because if they get there, the twin on Earth will be dead by the time they get there. If they don't, the twin is already dead because they're in space. So the purpose of tracking them essentially is irrelevant, and they choose to, in that moment, stage the funeral for their twin there and effectively grieve for their twin in advance instead of living waiting for a message from them.
Well, you don't want a message from them, because, like, if it's going to take 3,000 years and they're only meant to unfreeze 3,000 years from now, and, like, in 30 years' time, or 3 years' time, you get a message from them, then all you know is somebody's going to go suffocate in the middle of space for no reason.
Exactly. But, yeah,
and plus, that message would be, like, hundreds of years old,
yep,
because of how long it takes to travel.
But yeah, it's the thought that it's better to believe that your twin will have made it there than to think about what if they didn't.
There is also something quite interesting about that idea of, like, grieving
and then
and looking up and knowing that something's out there.
And then what I forgot is, as this is happening,
there's no twin in space. It's a Fight Club ripoff.
No,
he's the twin.
I was going to say, basically, and then just as he's said goodbye to his twin, suddenly Doc Brown runs into the theatre and tells him, he's got to go back for the kids.
It's your twin son. Something's got to be done about your twin son.
And so he says, but my twin didn't have a son. And he says, your twin does. In the future!
Dun, dun, dun! and then there's
a sequel, and it ends with Doc Brown, and the twin appears like, you've got to help me, Doc. I'm back from the other twin's future. And then the third one just got cowboy hats.
Yeah. And because
on the other planet...
Well, whilst this gets wildly out of hand...
I love Back to the Future.
Usually we would smush, but because this has been an episode full of smushes, we are coming away with originally three pitches, but several shows have come out of the different pitches anyway. But I genuinely think that, like, all of these shows are genuinely good. I want to see all three of these shows really, really badly.
I want to see how we bring to life a cigarette flying across the stage and melting ice to reel a predator.
Okay, Sean, I think yours should be a ballet as well.
Mine will be something.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. That's the end. Yeah. Sean, do your spiel.
So this is the podcast. Jem normally says, like, oh, and I've got a bomb. Doesn't Jem sometimes say, like,
on that bombshell?
Well, there is a bombshell. This is actually the last time that I'm going to butcher this part. So for the last, because I'm leaving one foot in the door, guys. Don't cry. I had to explain to Gemma last night that we're still friends. Don't worry. This voice note isn't me saying I don't want to talk to you anymore.
And Sean had to explain to me we were never friends.
He had to deal with that. I just wanted someone to play Fortnite with. So I'm leaving one foot in the door. I'm not going to go into it because I'm not really good at explaining things. So for the last time, guys, I'm going to tell you to hit that subscribe. I mean, I'm still going to be on the podcast every now and then if they do them, if they can carry on, if they can find someone to put up with the footage they send you over to edit together. But guys,
that's basically Sean saying we've driven him out.
Driven me crazy. It's been a blast, guys. And if you guys are still listening at this point, don't forget to say no to drugs and to hit subscribe on whatever you're listening or watching this on. And if you want to find out more about One Foot in the Door and all the amazing stuff that Jem and Joe are going to do and whoever they replace me with, there's a Linktree article. No, there's a Linktree link and underneath. You'd think after 51 times, I'd get this. It's down there, guys. Hit that and you go to the Linktree and it's like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. And if you want to see what I'm doing now, basically, you want to see what, because I'm on Instagram and I'm, you know, I read books and I post it and I go to theatre and I post it and that's my life. Yeah, it's there still, Shawnee B. If you want to follow Gemma, you can do that at,
you can do that on Instagram at OFITD_Gem with a J, or you can go to Linktree/Gem Ralston.
There you go. She's definitely going to be doing more stuff because she's got her own Linktree. And if you want to follow Joe, hey Joe, where can they do that?
If you want to follow me, you can do so at Not Joe Ronchka. That's NotJoeRaczka. And you can find on my Twitter there, you can find my Linktree to all the other things I'm doing. And do you know what? Just because I don't really use them much anymore, if you were going to follow me, instead, maybe use the time, watch the film Galaxy Quest. It's a great kind of like parody / homage to the old Star Trek films. And it's still genuinely one of the funniest films of all time.
Who doesn't know what Galaxy Quest is?
There might be Gen Zers watching.
Do a double bill of Galaxy Quest and then Starship Troopers.
Yeah, just if you haven't, there's also, I forget its name now, but there's a great documentary that was made, I think, on the 20th anniversary of Galaxy Quest that is fantastic. Especially just for the bits of Alan Rickman utterly bodying Tim Allen. Yeah. But yeah, that's it from me.
Brilliant. Oh, Sean.
End the podcast before you start crying.
All right. Well, everybody, guess for one last time, we knocked it out the pitch.